Hi, welcome to Alaska Radio Reader Rambler. I'm Sandy Harper here with my co-host Dick Reichman, bringing you a monthly potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. And today we're welcoming a dear old friend, Wayne Mergler, an annual regular on our show. He is a major literary guru and a voracious reader, and we will check in on the progress of his ongoing novel, ideas for summer reading, and a whole bunch of other things, and maybe including if you've changed his mind about the Kindle. Welcome, Wayne.
Thank you, Sandy. Before we go into all that,
let's just talk a few minutes about Valdez. The last Frontier Theater Conference, Dick and I just returned from that, and it was wonderful. I totally agree. It really served the playwrights and the actors this time.
Yeah, really, everybody who went felt really well served, whatever capacity they were in, and it was extremely well organized, and it was just a great event.
The best ever, as many people have said, so congratulations, Dawson, and your team in Valdez for making this a highlight of everybody who loves theater and does theater in Alaska.
Yeah, Valdez Theater Conference in Valdez, and if you have never attended, consider it next year if you're a theater lover, and you can spend a few days in Valdez, Alaska. You can immerse yourself in theater, both local and nationwide.
Great.
Was it early this year? I thought usually it was later in the summer.
Typically, it is the second week or so of June.
Oh,
but
June,
next
okay.
year, it might be earlier because okay. there is conflict because of the Three Barons Fair and things like that for all the actors to be there for the whole event.
Okay.
But summer is a good time for reading, isn't it?
Oh, well, of course. Yeah. Well, for me, any time is a good time for reading.
That's true.
Love to read in the wintertime. People talk about summer reading, what I'm going to read this summer. But to me, the best time to read is in the winter when you're by the fire and it's too cold to go out and you have a nice pot of tea next to you and the windows are all frosted over and, you know, it's all atmospheric for reading.
Sounds like Dickens.
Yes, it does.
And we know you're a major Dickinsonian guy.
Funny you should mention that because I wanted to talk a bit about Dickens only because, I mean, anybody who knows me knows that I'm a huge Dickens fanatic. But that's being a Dickens fanatic has always been a rather lonely life, you know, and now suddenly Dickens is everywhere. Dickens has become hot again. I'm not quite sure how this happened, but
there are new biographies.
Well, I don't know about biographies, but there are novels. There are at least three novels I know that are out right now that are sort of hot bestsellers and doing very, very well in the bookstores.
Have you read them?
I have.
Oh, tell us about them.
All three of them are either inspired by Dickens's life or inspired by his writings. And then there are a couple of others that have been around for 2 or 3 years, maybe, that maybe were at the beginning of this tendency to suddenly re-examine Charles Dickens. But the one is called Drood. One of the new novels is called Drood, which is, of course, in reference to Dickens's last novel, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, which he left unfinished at his death. And so The Mystery of Edwin Drood really is indeed a mystery because no one has any idea what Charles Dickens was going to do. He was not one of those writers who left a detailed outline or notes, abundant notes for what he was planning to do with this novel. So literary scholars for a century now have been trying to second guess what Charles Dickens's last novel was really going to be.
So the novel is about the theories of how it might have gone? Or?
Well, not necessarily. This novel, Drood, is by Dan Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Simmons, if Mr. Simmons is listening, I have to apologize to him. I always dismiss Dan Simmons as just kind of a second-rate Stephen King. I mean, he sort of writes Stephen King-ish thrillers and the macabre and that sort of thing. And I never took any of that very seriously, but when he came out with a book called Drood, which is a huge epic-sized tome, I thought, well, this must have something to do with Edwin Drood and Charles Dickens, so let me look into this. And it's wonderful. I mean, he's very, very good. Dan Simmons is very good. And he knows his Dickens. He knows his material. And what the novel is about, essentially, is the last 5 years in Charles Dickens's life. And anybody who knows Dickens' life knows that in 1865, which was 5 years before he died, he was in a horrendous train wreck that is still quite famous in England as one of their horrific disasters. And Dickens managed to survive, although most of the people on the train did not survive. And Dickens, not only was he one of the most famous people in the world at that time, so it was big news that Dickens was on this train, but he also conducted himself quite heroically. He helped people, and he helped get people out of the wreckage, and he tended to the injured, and so he really conducted himself quite well. And so this novel, Drood, begins with that event and then takes you over the next 5 years of Dickens' life. And it's narrated by Wilkie Collins, who is another Victorian novelist and who wrote thrillers. He was sort of the Stephen King of his day.
What a clever idea.
And Wilkie Collins was also Dickens' friend / rival. He was actually Dickens' Salieri, if you know Amadeus.
That, darn that Mozart.
Yes, and there's too many notes.
Well, Dickens had a lot of notes.
Yes, Dickens had a lot of notes, too. But Wilkie Collins, apparently this part is true, even though Drood is a novel. Wilkie Collins loved Dickens and admired Dickens, but was also fiercely jealous of Dickens. And Dickens was a genius, and Wilkie Collins, though he was quite good, was not a genius and was well aware of it, and could not help but be fiercely jealous. And we also know from facts and of history that Wilkie Collins was a drug addict. He was an opium addict, as many Victorians were, and he is narrating this story about Charles Dickens and his last 5 years through kind of an opium haze. And so we never really know. The reader is never quite sure what's real and what's hallucination, which adds to the atmosphere of the novel, which is very gothic, very dark and foggy, and as is Wilkie Collins' mind, very dark and foggy. And so Drood comes in where, you know, Dickens is writing a novel called The Mystery of Edwin Drood, but according to Dan Simmons's novel, Drood is a real person, and he's rather a monstrous, terrifying person. And we don't know if he's real or if this is Wilkie Collins's hallucination. It's a fascinating book.
Page turner.
It really is. Yeah. It's very, very dark. It's very, you know, lots of sort of labyrinthine, wet, dark streets and corridors and weird gothic grotesque characters and crypts where people are buried and underground London, which is, you know, they were building the underground, the subways then. And so there's this whole sort of culture of people who have fled underground and they're living down there.
Somebody should make an HBO series out of this.
it's just a terrific book, Drood. I think it's still only in hardback, which indicates it's selling quite well if it's not out in paperback yet. But that was the first of this sudden. I think Drood came out around Christmas time. So within the last 6 months, there's been this sudden burst of Dickens.
What were the other ones?
Well, the other one, excuse me, there's one called The Last Dickens, which is by Matthew Pearl. And I can't remember what Matthew Pearl has written before, but he's a best-selling novelist. He wrote one about Dante, a book with Dante in the title, The Dante Puzzle or something like that. And again, a writer I hadn't paid much attention to, but a novel called The Last Dickens I had to look into. And it is also fiction about the writing of Dickens's last novel, The Mystery of Edwin Drood. And in that book, the hero is an American publisher who I think is based on a real person. He was an American publisher who published Dickens's works. And they have the first installment of The Mystery of Edwin Drood, which is what we all have, which was what exists now. and they're waiting for the second installment, and they hear that Dickens has died. And so they're wondering, oh, what's going to happen to this book? There must be, you know, more to this book. And they understand that one is coming. One is being shipped, literally, by ship, from London to, I believe it's Boston. And so the publisher, Hero, sends his young clerk down to the docks to get this book. And, of course, his young clerk is found brutally murdered, and this manuscript has vanished. And so it's he's having fun with
mystery upon mystery with upon
the mystery,
mystery
of the mystery. Yes. Well,
was the Dickens book a mystery story? Was it?
It's a murder mystery.
Uh-huh. And I can almost swear there's a play by that name, but I'm not sure.
Oh, there is. Oh, yes, they did. There was a Broadway play, The Mystery of Edwin Drood.
Yes.
In which, because it's unfinished and we don't know who did it, he wrote enough for the crime to have been committed. We know that Edwin Drood has been murdered, or we assume Edwin Drood has been murdered. We don't really know what Dickens was planning.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as we know, Edwin Drood has been murdered. He's a young man who's been he disappears. He just suddenly disappears. And the Broadway musical, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, which was several years ago, they had all of these alternative endings where the audience would vote for who the murderer was. You know, they had like 12 main characters, and so they had 12 potential murderers.
What fun!
And the audience every night and on Broadway would vote for who they wanted to see as the murderer. And then that would, of course, change the last act of the play altogether, depending on which person they voted
for. So the actors had to know 12 different scenarios.
They had to know 12 different scenarios. That was probably 20 years ago or so. I know Betty Buckley was in that. Do you know Betty Buckley, that
name? Yes, I do.
She was the big star of that. And she actually played Edwin. She played a young man. So anyway, there's that one, the last Dickens. And then the third one that's come out very recently, within the last few weeks, is a novel by Richard Flanagan, who's an Australian writer, and he's quite well known. He wrote Death of a River Guide, if you remember that, came out a few years ago, which was quite an exciting Australian novel. but his is called Wanting. And Wanting it's not about Edwin Drood, oddly enough, but it's about Dickens, and it's about Sir John Franklin, who was the great Arctic explorer. You know, John Franklin, who disappeared in the Arctic, and then his wife, Lady Jane Franklin.
Oh, she wrote a book about Sitka.
And she financed all of these expeditions to try and find her husband.
Wow.
Anyway, Dickens and Franklin lived at the same time. I don't know if they knew each other or not, but in the novel Wanting, they know each other, and Lady Jane Franklin knows Dickens. And Dickens and Wilkie Collins, again, one of their collaborations was they wrote a play called The Frozen Deep. And The Frozen Deep was also turned into a novella by Dickens and Collins, but its first incarnation was as a play, and that was based on the John Franklin expedition.
Is that published too?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Hmm. The Frozen Deep is definitely out there. But what's interesting is what Richard Flanagan has done here is he's taken that germ of the fact that Dickens wrote this play and novella about the Franklin expedition, and he's written this novel around this. So
that's fascinating, especially for Alaska.
It is. Yeah. It's almost like an Alaska connection to Dickens.
If I remember correctly, the Franklin expedition got iced in eastern Canada,
yes,
way up north,
yes,
Ellesmere Island or something,
yes,
way up there.
And they just vanished. They just vanished. Uh-huh. There was no, I believe they found the ship. But there were. I'm not sure of this. There are probably people listening.
Well, there's a lot of bop finding sunken ships these days.
Than I know, but I don't think it was a sunken ship. I think it was just a frozen in the ice ship, right there. But there was nobody on it. If I might be confusing another storyline here. But I know that Franklin and his crew just vanished, and Franklin's wife, Lady Jane, mm-hmm, would never accept the fact that he was dead. She kept sending expeditions. She said, he's got to be out there somewhere. He's got.
It's a great love story, too.
But yes, but they, of course, never found what happened. So that like The Mystery of Edwin Drood. That's an eternal mystery, what happened to the Franklin expedition. And it was apparently huge news in Victorian times, particularly in England.
Right.
So,
at what period was Dickens touring America, where he was a big sensation?
Well, he came over twice. Once in the 1840s, when he was quite young. I think he was 29, his first trip. And that was the one where he didn't like us at all. And he went back and wrote Martin Chuzzlewit and American Notes and was very unflattering to Americans. And of course, the reason he didn't like us, I mean, he didn't, like everybody else, he found Americans very charming and very friendly and nice. But, you know, Dickens was the great idealist and the great, you know, he was not fond of capitalism. He was pretty much a socialist, although that was not a term he ever used or maybe even knew about in those days. But he was opposed to capitalism and sort of the horrors of the Industrial Revolution.
He was a casualty as a child.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But he found that Americans, he was very much a champion of the underdog and the little person and the common man and all of that. And he found that Americans on paper, you know, America on paper sounded just superb. But he thought in reality, you know, he was there in the 1840s where we still had slavery and we had horrendous conditions in the factories in New England, which was basically slavery, although it wasn't called that. And he just found all of these contradictions to the sort of American ideal and the land of the free, home of the brave kind of thing, you know.
Was that the content of the lectures he gave or no?
Right after that first tour, yes. I mean, he was very opposed to much that was American. But he changed. And later in his life, he came back a second time about 2 years before he died, which would have been 1868.
So he was writing Drood.
And it was after the, well, and in the novel Drood by Dan Simmons, that trip to America is also part of the story.
Ah.
But he by the second trip, the Civil War was over, slavery had been abolished, things were changing, and he had second thoughts then. He realized he had been not wrong. He wasn't wrong. He didn't think he was wrong. And I don't think anybody thinks he was wrong. I mean, his criticisms were quite valid. I mean, we were a land that had slavery at the same time claiming to be the home of the free for everybody, you know. But Dickens reassessed his view of Americans at that point.
Very interesting, because I understood he was like a rock star phenomenon.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He was bigger than the Beatles and Elvis. Yeah, I mean, he is considered the first superstar. You know, he was the first person that could not go anywhere without screaming, hysterical crowds following him around and ripping his clothes and wanting a souvenir the kind of superstardom that I don't think any writer of novels will ever have again. But yes, he was considered the first worldwide superstar.
We're talking to Wayne Mergler, and we're talking about Dickens' favorite thing of Wayne, our
Wayne's favorite
reference.
Thing.
Yes, my favorite thing.
Now, I'm curious, for the people who don't know Dickens, why do you love this author so much? What would you say to someone?
Do you remember your first experience with Dickens?
Someone who hasn't read Dickens. Why do you love this author so much?
For one thing, my immediate answer to that is I don't know. I don't know why I love him so much. I just do. But I do remember being exposed to Dickens at a very early age. My grandmother was a sixth grade teacher, and she was an avid reader. And her idea of reading for children was, you know, they were supposed to read The Last of the Mohicans and Ivanhoe and all of that stuff. There was no Judy Blume or any of, you know, none of these sort of contemporary people who write for children. And so my grandmother had all of these classics on her shelf, and she had a complete set of Dickens. I remember that. And I don't recall that I actually read them then. I don't think I did, but I was aware of them. I was aware that there was this Charles Dickens guy that I was supposed to be reading. And then when I was 13, we moved to Europe. My father was in the military, and we moved to Europe. We were living in Germany. And the PX on the post had a very small spinner of 25-cent paperbacks. That tells you how old I am. And but that was my choice for books. And I remember one day getting on my bicycle and riding into the village, leaving the base and riding into the German village. And I came upon a bookstore. And I went in, and of course, all the books were in German. but there was this wonderful elderly woman in there. And I spoke very little German, but she fortunately spoke English. And I said, "Do you have any books in English?" And she said, "Yes, we do. We have a small selection." And there was a small bookshelf of English language novels, but they were all from London. They weren't American. They were all from England. And most of them were by Dickens. And I remember I bought Great Expectations and the Christmas novels, which includes A Christmas Carol. And I can't remember what the other one was. But I remember those two. I think there were three of them, but I remember Great Expectations and the Christmas Stories. And so I bought those and rode them home on my bicycle and started reading them, and I just
It was a life-changing event for you.
It
really
was. Well, I remember Great Expectations especially. I really, I just related so much to Pip, and which is not always a flattering thing to say to oneself, because Pip is one of Dickens's heroes who is not always admirable. You know, I mean, when he wrote Oliver Twist and David Copperfield, they were sort of angelic and pure and good. Pip is not. Pip is a real person, a real kid. And one of Pip's problems is he wants to be a gentleman. He has great expectations, but he's the son of working class people. His stepfather is a blacksmith, and that's sort of, he's doomed to be a blacksmith, but he wants to be a gentleman. And he's very embarrassed by his family, ashamed of his family. I remember going through that. I mean, there was nothing wrong with my family, but I remember thinking that there was, we were Southerners, and I remember thinking that my parents were such rednecks and being so embarrassed, you know, and wanting to be out in the world of glamour and intellectualism and literature and the arts, and my parents were watching Hee Haw, you know, that kind of thing. And
back with the Muggles.
And so I just related like mad to.
But you had this aunt as well.
Oh, you know about my aunt. Oh, you met her, in fact. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful aunt. Well, actually, my family was quite wonderful in many ways. I just was too young and stupid to notice the really good stuff. But I had a wonderful aunt who actually was my cousin. But I've always called her my aunt. She was my father's first cousin. But to me, she was one of the many aunts that were in my life. And her name was Clara Mergler. And she was just a brilliant, brilliant woman, taught English and math, which is almost unheard of. I mean, you're either good at one or the other. You're rarely good at both. She was good at both. An avid reader, read everything. And when I was reading, she was always interested in what I was reading. But she wasn't content to just say, "Oh, what are you reading? Oh, that looks good." Or, "Oh, I read that. That's wonderful." She wanted to discuss it. And she made me discuss what I read. Oh, and she would say, "Well, now, what do you think he meant by this? Mm-hmm. And why is he doing that?" And things that when I was reading as a child, I just wanted to know what was going to happen next. Mm-hmm. But she taught me to look differently into literature and to see themes and ideas and things, although she never called it that way. We were just having a conversation. You know, I didn't know she was actually teaching me, or might have resisted.
That's the same way you taught your students, I'm sure.
I hope so. I hope it is. But she was absolutely terrific. And you met her because when my younger daughter was married 15 years ago now, this aunt came to the wedding, and she was the only relative I could get to come to Alaska to this wedding. But she was very adventurous. And I have to tell you, she never married. She was a spinster school teacher. She was very severe looking. You know, you might recall she had her hair pulled back into this bun and very thick glasses, was very severe. And she was never, I don't feel she was ever appreciated very much by the family.
Certainly by you, though.
Well, by me, yes, but by her peers mm-hmm. and her own siblings and cousins, which would include my father, she was not appreciated. She was always sort of dismissed as weird because she never married, and that was just very strange to never marry and have children if you were a woman of that generation. Mm-hmm. She would have been born in the 19-teens, about 1916, I think, around there. Mm-hmm. And it was... she was dismissed as just very odd. She was also a very intellectual and artsy woman, which was odd in my family. And I don't feel she was ever fully appreciated, but she was a remarkable, remarkable person. And I've never forgotten, I hope I can say a little off-color thing on the radio. She said to me, you know, she had never married, so she was Miss Mergler. And she said, Wayne, when I die, she says, do not let them put Miss Mergler on my tombstone. She says, because I have not missed nearly as much as they think I have. And I always thought that was wonderful. So to my knowledge, Miss is not on her tombstone. I think it's
very
just...
goodness, maybe a secret tattoo somewhere.
Yeah. Who knows? I know that she was engaged during World War II, engaged to be married, and the young man was killed in the war, did not come back from the war, which I'm sure happened to many women. Mm-hmm. And she never married. I don't know if she never found anyone else or what the story was, but she was largely, she inspired me to read everything, not just Dickens, but Dickens would have been one of her favorites.
You know, so. Wayne, as usual, this has gone really fast. We've just got a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
Was there a couple of names of things that you were going to talk about that you're not going to get to that you want to toss out there?
No.
Are you doing the blog? You were mentioning you.
I am.
Tell us about that.
I'm writing a column for an online newspaper called Official Wire. And it's just www.officialwire.com. And it's a wonderful newspaper. I think they've actually won a Webby. And I guess a Webby is like a website Emmy or something. But I do write a column. I'm the voice from Alaska. They have a series called Letters From, and they have letters from South Carolina and letters from Texas and letters from Massachusetts. And I'm the letter from Alaska guy, and I do one a month. I have one column in there a month. And it's not just about literature. I just write about everything. I try not to write too much about politics because I have to live here with my among people. But occasionally I can't help myself and do write about politics. But usually it's just...
to visit the stream of consciousness of your mind and your background and framework would be a great pleasure for us all.
I'm really enjoying doing this column. And what I'm loving about it is they're very... open and liberal in the sense that they let me just write whatever I want. Nobody yet has tried to censor me or anything or say, oh, no, that's not appropriate. So anything I feel inspired to write about, they embrace that. And so, yeah, I'm having a great time.
Wayne, thank you again for visiting us. Like Dick said, he went all too quickly. There were so many more things I wanted to talk about, such as where your novel is.
Well, my novel is sort of neglected at the moment.
Somebody's got to write a novel about you.
I told you I finished it, but now I'm in the process of editing and revising and changing, and I have to chop about half of it out because, like all amateur novelists, it's way too long. So I'm doing that now.
Dickens' books were quite long.
Yes.
So anyway, a wonderful to see you again, Wayne, and we'll have to have another appearance soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to another edition of Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, and join us again next month.